virtual couch.
Let's get cozy and comfortable and get ready to hear some
enlightening,
empowering, and inspiring talk on the virtual couch with Leticia.
Leticia's virtual couch.
Leticia's virtual couch.
Listen to this phenomenally positive message by Maria Taylor. Ironically, she recorded this message months prior to the entire ESPN incident. Enjoy.
I just wanted you to know that you're pretty dope. Like, I don't care what society tells you. They might tell you that your skin's not pretty enough, that there's not enough shades to match your makeup, that although all women make 82 cents to the dollar on white men, you make 62 cents. They may tell you that you don't deserve that promotion, even though you know you do. They may tell you that when you get the promotion that you only got it because you were black, but we know that's not true. I just want you to know that I believe in you. So resist the urge to fall in line. Don't be humble, girl, brag, because you are so fine. You're the only one that can do what you do on a daily basis and never say boo-hoo to anyone because you are the one, the black woman that's stronger than everyone.
It's no secret that we need substantial change in the form of policies in the workplace when it comes to diversity. And to be honest with you, since the death of George Floyd, we have seen a lot of companies step up to the plate and recognize that diversity is something that needs to happen. And conversations have been had. People have been coming to the table to make those changes. However, we have seen a lot of people who are satisfied with the previous status quo. And that is African Americans, Black Americans being at the low end of the totem pole while they see themselves rising. In recent weeks, we have seen that happened in the NBA and ESPN commentator Rachel Nichols. And I retract the last statement, not really the NBA, but the NBA finals was the topic of discussion. And she was having a conversation with a colleague regarding another fellow colleague by the name of Maria Taylor, basically taking her spot. And so with that said, we have had discussions about who are our real allies and who are not our real allies. And this is one example of that. So today's episode, I want to have a discussion about diversity. And are the individuals that you're speaking with in other communities, are they really for us or are they against us? And this is going to be an interesting discussion because as long as you're not taking off the table and out of the mouth of someone else, then it's all rainbows and butterflies. But we really get to see the real people and the real and how they really think when they feel like their positions are threatened. So please stay tuned after this break. The discussions on this podcast is for informational purposes only. If you find yourself becoming triggered by any topic, please refrain from listening and reach out to your nearest emergency room or dial 911. If you desire to seek therapy in the future, please Google and find your nearest therapist in close proximity to you. Thank you.
Thank you.
this is your girl Letitia coming to you from the virtual couch. I want to take a little bit of your time today to discuss how to find the right therapist. Now, like with anything, your hairstylist, your gardener, your medical doctor, it may take a few tries before you find the right fit. Finding the right therapist is no different. So stay the course and don't give up. Also, I want to empower you to ask questions. Do not feel like you're being intrusive by asking questions, because guess what? This is the person that's going to lead you and guide you towards your healing. And this is a very important partnership. So I will say this even as a therapist myself. If a therapist becomes offended by any questions that you may have, just like with any other individual that I discussed before, like your doctor, your gardener, whoever, someone, you know, working on your home, if they become offended, you're probably not going to hire them, right? Exactly. Your therapist is no different. So don't feel offended. Don't be offended by the degrees and the licenses and, yes, all those hard things we worked for, but we're here for you. And so it is your right to ask every question you need to ask to make sure it is the right fit for you. And again, it may take a few tries. And again, it doesn't mean that you're a bad person or that therapist is a bad person either. It just means that, you know what, they may not be the right person to guide you on your journey. So I want to leave you with a few resources. PsychologyToday.com is a resource where you can view various therapists, and you can even input your area by your zip code, your city, and your state to find the therapist nearest you. You can also go to therapyforblackgirls.com and therapyforblackmen.org. Please seek these resources out. They are awesome. There are some wonderful, very experienced therapists on these sites, some of which are my beautiful colleagues, and I know the hard work that they do, and they are waiting to hear from you. Okay, so I'm not gonna take any more of your time, because I know you can't wait to get to that computer, right, and search out that therapist. So I'm not going to say anything further. If you want to tell me about your experience, I would love to hear about it. Please email me at virtualcouchpodcast1@gmail.com. And happy hunting. Take care.
Did y'all enjoy the break? Now find your spot on the virtual couch and get ready to hear our girl, Letitia, drop some more gems on ya. Drop some more gems on them, Letitia.
Letitia, drop some more gems on them.
Before we get into all of the controversy, let's define racial trauma. Let's begin by bringing some context to the discussion, because I want you to really understand what racial trauma is before I get into, again, the recent controversy. Media depiction of racism, such as police violence against unarmed Black people, may also trigger feelings of racial trauma. So I wanted to preface what I'm going to say with that. Many marginalized groups experience higher rates of post-traumatic stress disorder, which is called PTSD, which better known as PTSD, I should say, than white people. Much of this trauma stems from experiences with racism or racist systems. Now, according to a 2020 survey, Black people in the U.S. are about 5 times as likely as white people to report unfair or discriminatory experience with police. That's sad, right? Now, abuse does come in all forms. And I recently learned another term. Now, I know a lot of times racial trauma is associated with some of the same characteristics as, say, narcissistic abuse, right? So we hear about the gaslighting, and I'll get into that a little bit later. So I learned a new term, called racial triangulation. Now, we have seen this occur where Black and Asians
were recently pitted against each other, right? And so I think that's where this was coined, the racial triangulation, meaning where you have two groups that are being pitted against each other while there's like a mastermind or maybe like a puppet master. So this happens in narcissistic abuse where you may have, you know, the perpetrator, the manipulator that is the one that's really stirring all the trouble, but they have two individuals that are at odds with each other. And to be honest with you, a lot of times they're both being played by the master manipulator if they both are not paying attention. So we see this in the whole angle and MO of triangulation in both cases is control, basically, keeping the attention off of them, right? So I wanted to educate you on that term as well. Now, as I stated before, gaslighting is when we are made to believe that our experiences are a figment of our imagination. They're not real. So you may have experiences yourself. I know I personally have in the workplace. And I'll get into that a little bit later of just like individuals who have made it to highest stratosphere in their professional world. Just know that we have paid our dues. African-American, Black Americans, if you see anyone of your same race, African-American, Black American, have endured and climbed the social ladder, if you will, trust and believe we have endured some mess in these streets, okay? In these streets. I can write a book on that alone, okay? But what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. I'm just going to say that. So basically gaslighting, I'll give an example. Let's say if I say that I'm experiencing racism on the job, I'm being discriminated against, and my supervisor or just a fellow coworker may say, well, I've never seen that. That person is a nice person, you know, and then sometimes they'll turn it back on you. So I just want to use that as an example. And there's many other examples. And before I go on, if you want to share some of those examples, please use the voice message feature on Anchor, or you can email me at virtualcouchpodcast1@gmail.com. Now, the systematic effects of racism is usually seen in health disparities, school to prison pipeline. I know you've heard of these a lot, right? Redlining. And I'm not going to go into detail of what these are. I'm going to tell you what I tell my students when I'm teaching on university level. Go research. I'm not going to do the work for you. So again, health disparities, and that's in the medical, in the medical arena, the health disparities that we see and that basically have dire consequences for us. The school to prison pipeline, redlining, income gaps and inequitable wealth distribution, failing urban schools while predominantly white schools are flourishing. So these are some of the things that we will see with the effects of racism. Of course, there's many, many more. I can even talk about gang violence because, you know, a lot of times our Black men and Black, you know, women, our youth, are ostracized and, you know, belittled about gang violence. But if you really want to look closer with the magnifying glass, it all stems from racism. It all stems from our urban communities not receiving the funds and the assistance that we need. And that goes back to the schools, because guess what? When the property value of our communities are high, then basically that's going to equate to what's going on in our schools and vice versa, right? So those go hand in hand. And more recently, I wanted to just even add this before I go on, just the entitlement that we saw in the cheating scandal with USC, UCLA, and all the other predominantly PWIs, we call them PWIs, predominantly white institutions, the entitlement. So not only do we see these disparities in the food deserts and all of these things, but you have individuals who feel entitled that they're stealing and cheating to get in these positions. So I don't want to hear anything about, well, you need to just do this and work hard. No,
since the beginning of time, this has been going on. And this is not all, because I don't want anyone to say that I'm generalizing all and lumping all white people in one lump. No, I'm not. No, I'm not. Because a lot of this, too, can be alluded to classism. And that's a whole nother story. And so classism is really big. And that means the have and the have nots. And guess what? That crosses color lines. It does. So I want to take a break. When I come back, I am going to discuss the causes. What are some of the causes of racial trauma? How does it manifest? And I'm telling you, this episode is very interesting. So please stay tuned. Don't go anywhere and invite other people. If you're in the middle of this podcast and you feel like, oh my God, this is good, get one of your friends, pause and have them join in and subscribe to Anchor as well. So please stay tuned. Now, let's get into the causes of racial trauma. Now, let me just say this. This list isn't exhaustive, so there's more that can be added to the list. And while I'm on that, please, if you have any ideas, if you want to contribute to this episode by sharing your personal experiences or adding even to this list, please email me at virtualcouchpodcast1@gmail.com. So now that's all out of the way. Let's talk about the causes of racial trauma. Some of them, rather. Exposure to racial or ethnic stereotypes. Now, an example of that could be in academics or test books that assert that some racial groups are better or worse at certain tasks. So we've seen that. I don't even really have to get into that. We see that in our textbooks right now, right? Africans are look like they were the savages that needed to be saved. And there's really not a lot about slavery. Why? We all know why, because we would have seen it for the atrocity that it actually is, right? And American society definitely doesn't want that, okay? Or even having microaggressions directed at students inside the classroom. I have actually witnessed this being in the school setting. Certain comments that a teacher may make towards a student, and just anything that makes, say, for instance, black or brown or any minority ethnic group feel like they are subservient and less than the quote unquote dominant culture, okay? Another cause could be fear about personal safety. Now, an example of that could be a scenario where a Latinx person fears being labeled as an undocumented migrant, or a person of color, African American, Black American, or even brown, could just be fearful of the police. So just fearing of personal safety. And that's one right that we all, on a very innate level, we can even arrive at self-actualization. If you're familiar with the Maslow hierarchy of need. Now, this is I won't go into a lot of detail about it, because if you're not a psych major or majored in psych, you really wouldn't know what I'm explaining. But basically what it is, there is a hierarchy of various stages that a person should achieve before they reach self-actualization. Basically, being self-actualizing is when you can be creative and when you're looking at things in life from an optimistic standpoint. Case in point, if I want to save the world, if I want to heal the world, I can't even think on that level if my basic needs are met, right? So if I'm homeless, if my personal safety is being threatened, my mind can't even go to those levels because I need to take care of myself first, basically. That's what it means, okay? So enough of that. Another cause of racial trauma could be witnessing members of a person's group receiving abuse. Now, we see that a lot in the media, right? This can be in real life or via the media. So such as when a Latinx person sees migrant children being detained and stripped from their families at gunpoint. We have seen that for crossing the borders. Or you may see have a Black person who see an unarmed Black person being killed on national TV. Now, how many times have we seen that? Exactly. Another cause could be racial abuse of loved ones. This could be an attack on partners, parents, or children. And we have a lot of individuals who have actually had this happen in real life. Myself, as a therapist, I have had individuals tell me that they have witnessed firsthand these things happen to their loved ones or have endured them themselves. Another thing is direct exposure to racial abuse, as I just stated, or discrimination. This may be hearing racist stereotypes at work or being the recipient of racial slurs or witnessing it happening to someone else. But this case, again, it is more direct towards the person at hand. Another example could be not taking the experience of racism seriously. And I think I alluded to that before when it comes to the gaslighting. So this may happen when people question if someone's experience was real. I have had this happen to me. So these things, I'm not making them up. There are things that are actually happening in the workplace, in, you know, settings that we come across every day and that we have to endure every day. So imagine going to work and receiving this type of treatment. It's like being under constant abuse. And then you may have some people say, well, why don't you just leave? Okay, pick up and leave your job, and then what's going to happen? You know, when you're not working for self, which is one of the main reasons why I wanted to work for myself, was because you have more freedom, you have more liberty to, you know, to not endure these things, first of all. So, so again, these were a list of causes of racial trauma. But of course, there are many, many, many other examples. I'm pretty sure that you can add to this. Other examples may include historical trauma. Like I said, again, microaggressions, experiences of living with inequalities, such as access to schools and medical treatment and things of that sort. So just think, it's being constantly bombarded with things that the average person takes for granted. You know, people of color endure so much that our white counterparts take for granted. Okay, so racial effects are not too different from regular trauma. Racial trauma effects are not too different from regular trauma that we have often heard about. For instance, active duty members in the military, you know, we always talk about PTSD, okay? However, racial trauma is something specific to racial discrimination, prejudice, and biases. So when we talk about the effects of trauma, we often talk about, again, PTSD, which is post-traumatic stress disorder. The more recently, CPTSD, but I'm not going to go into detail about that because I don't want to confuse any of you guys. My fellow clinicians that are out there, they know what CPTSD is, and that's usually for people who have endured some type of sexual abuse and trauma that, you know, trauma that is more like sexual abuse and neglect and things of that sort. Some of the symptoms are the same, but some may be a little different than our regular PTSD. Okay, so according to medicalnewstoday.com, people suffer from symptoms of PTSD. And now some of them symptoms would be witnessing or enduring a traumatic event. So that's one thing that has to happen. One person must witness or have endured a traumatic event. And from that, we may see symptoms of hypervigilance, avoidance, flashbacks, startle response, recurring thoughts of events. And that's almost like a movie reel, like it's being played over and over again in one's mind. Someone who has endured trauma may also experience depressive symptoms and anxiety. And so chronic exposure to discrimination can be very humiliating, frightening, and even isolating. And I even wanted to add depersonalization and derealization. And so if you want to Google that, because I'm not going to go into really what that's about, but it's almost like a out-of-body experience, sometimes when people don't even feel connected to their own body, that can happen with racial trauma. And I have seen that firsthand, I've heard of that firsthand as well with individuals who I have worked with. Now, let's go into symptoms really quick because I really want to get into why I'm here today, going over all of this and providing you with a foundation. But you know me, I like to inspire, educate, empower, all of that. So I don't want to just go into the juicy gossip without having some context behind that. And if you know me personally, know that I am an educator at heart, being a professor before and just even as a clinician. I like my clients and I like my students to really know the all the sides of a situation prior to forming their opinion, even though, A, everyone has an opinion and you're entitled to one, but at least I want you to have all the information to make a very informed and educated opinion and not speaking things that you really don't know about, which we see a lot in society today, right? Okay, so the symptoms. Racial trauma can affect virtually every aspect of a person's well-being. So many people with trauma, racial trauma experience, like I said, symptoms of PTSD, especially after direct experience of discrimination or racist violence. So when trauma is triggered, we may regress into primal states of fear, react aggressively, or become paralyzed and not be able to assess the level of threat. And I'm going to give you a list of examples of what that looks like in everyday life. One thing can happen that when I first was reading up on this is the propensity for Black males to engage, or Black females too, or I'll just say urban youth, because I don't even want to really put an ethnicity to it. Urban youth, if you are born and raised in an urban environment, which primarily is you're Black and brown, male and female, you may see a propensity to engage in gang violence, criminal behavior, or other aggressive acts. And it could be as a result of trauma, even though it is not very popular to think that way, because of course we want to demonize our children, our youth in urban communities, and we want to already just automatically go to it being a form of delinquency, which it can be a trauma response. It definitely can be. Okay, so some symptoms could include distress relating to the trauma, and this may cause a person to think about and relive an event continually. Some individuals may have flashbacks or nightmares of the traumatic event, and that definitely happens a lot with children, but it happens with adults as well. You'd be surprised how many adults have nightmares, flashbacks, and night terrors. One of the other things, of course, we talked about avoidance before as a symptom of PTSD, is avoiding things that remind the person of the trauma. This can negatively affect a person's life in many ways. For example, a person may experience racism on a job or even at a school, and that person may check out or leave that job just so they won't have to endure that that abuse. Now, this is not to say that's not a good thing, because you want to get out of abusive situations, relationships, any of that. However, if it becomes a pattern where you're always leaving things, relationships and things of that sort, you may want to check that out, okay? Because you can't run from everything. Some things you have to face and challenge head on. A person may also have a natural instinct to run out of fear when they see the police. And that can have some very dire consequences, because what usually happens when you see guys run from the police get hiding and they automatically think that they did something wrong. And then we see a lot of this happen in front of our eyes on TV, where we see people lose their lives. And that could actually be a trauma response. They see the police, they fear, they run, because that is our natural instinct, is to fight or flight. Okay. And I think I've talked about that in other episodes about our natural response to, fight or flight. Okay. And in this instinct, both are actually bad, because we've seen that too. where individual may fight the police and that just give them the license to kill. I'm just going to be honest with you. And we've seen individuals be shot in the back, which is horrible as well. Okay, let's go on. So another symptom could be intense anxiety or depression, as stated before, relating to the trauma. And this can happen at a specific time or it can happen continuously. One may feel distracted by memories or thoughts of the trauma. Again, this experience may occur from time to time or continuously. Negative thoughts about self or other people or of the world. For example, a person may lose trust in other people or worry that all authority figures want to harm them. And we see that a lot in kids who they just become fearful of the police. And we've seen different programs like community policing, having donuts with the police at different coffee shops or donut shops to bridge the gaps between the community and in the police department that service that community. We also may see an increased sensitivity and reactivity, right? So a person may startle easily and become more hypervigilant to their surroundings. And this may increase, again, exposure to further trauma, right? And so I talked about what that actually looks like. So in addition to symptoms of PTSD, racial trauma can also have symptoms and signs, including dissociation. And basically, this is the feeling of a person feeling numb or disconnected, as I talked about before, from themselves or others. In more extreme cases, and this is not anything that that I'm making up, this is real, a person may have like an out-of-body experience and not remember periods of an event. So an example, and I definitely want to bring this up, an example of this, you know how like when individuals, and this is not racial trauma that I'm going to get an example about, but it can happen here too. When people are, say, for instance, sexually abused and they come years later and you hear a barrage of people saying, well, why didn't they come, you know, and report this sooner? And so myself and a lot of my colleagues, we cringe, especially those that are proficient and certified in trauma. We know that a lot of times there are memory lapses. They have periods of dissociation where something may trigger a memory here and there, and it can happen years later. So I'm hoping this, you know, if you ever thought this before, that this educate you on what trauma can actually, you know, look like, okay? Weathering. This is the chronic health effects of exposure to racial discrimination and trauma. And marginalized populations typically have worse overall health and higher risk of cardiovascular disease and other ailments. And this may be because of the lifetime of trauma. So anytime you're dealing with trauma, your blood pressure and your adrenaline and those things are in cortisol. Those things are usually naturally healthy in the body, but over prolonged periods of time, it can do be damaging. If you are always at a state of arousal, then it can definitely do some damage to the heart. And that's why you see a lot of people in the African-American community. Now, I'm not going to take away from diet, but a lot of it can be stress too. Now, I want to go back and retract something I just stated. I don't want to confuse you, but high blood pressure is not it's not normal and it's not healthy. You know, the natural chemicals in our body are natural and they have their own specific purposes. Because when we are in danger, you know, those things help alert us when danger is near. But when they're prolonged, it can have the opposite effect on our body. Okay. So just wanted to clear that up. Okay. Prolonged trauma and poor mental health. Unlike some other traumas, racial discrimination continues to permeate much of everyday life. And this can mean that marginalized communities may face chronic trauma and aggression, making it difficult to recover from racist abuse. And we've seen that, right? Where you have a lot of people who are dealing with a lot of anger, which is not healthy, based on real life things though. You know, is the anger warranted? Absolutely. But you know, when we hold in anger inside and stress and all those icky, nasty emotions, they hurt ourselves and that's it, okay? Microaggressions in the workplace, cultural names not being picked. Oh, I can, What I mean by that, you may have people who, in your, on your resume, you have what we call, you may have a more ethnic name. Your name may not be picked for a callback, for an interview, because your name, some of these names that we have to be honest with you. I have to be honest with you. We know who they are. So I'm just going to say. And, you know, they already have made their assumptions about you based on names and hairstyles and textures and things of that sort. And being, you know, and comments being made on intellect. How many times have you been walking somewhere and they thought that you were the janitor? Are they? I mean, I'm pretty sure we have all had some type of experience where microaggressions were at play. I'm pretty certain. Or if you're a doctor and they automatically thought you were a nurse, you know? And so I can go all day about that as well. So I want to give some stats to you real quick before I take a little short break. A Pew Research survey found that 81% of Black people with college experience say they have been subjected to at least one instance of racial discrimination. This compares to 69% with a high school education or less. Black males are more likely than Black females to report unfair treatment by police. Now, the reason why I wanted to bring this stat up is because, have you ever heard the phrase, the higher levels, higher the devils? Absolutely. The higher you rise up in the stratosphere of success, the more you will see these things. I guarantee it. So I always tell people, you know, jokingly, of course, but also seriously, put respect on my name. If you see anyone who has climbed the social ladder, they have endured some things. Know that. And I said that before. They have endured some things because there's a lot that we deal with, and trust and believe we've paid our dues. And because, you know, just enduring these type of things and trying to get to where you want in life can be very demoralizing and exhausting. So as we lead up again to the recent events involving ESPN commentators Rachel Nichols and Maria Taylor, when I come back from the break, I want to discuss allyship. We've been hearing that word a lot, right? That title of ally. I'm with you. So we're going to get into that. See, I'm trying to set us up to go somewhere. See, I'm taking this ship very slowly, but I want you to be educated and get all pieces of this puzzle. Okay, so stay tuned.
Did y'all enjoy the break? Now find your spot on the virtual couch and get ready to hear our girl Letitia drop some more gems on ya. Drop some more gems on her, Letitia.
So let's talk allyship. What is it really? So I want to begin with a quote. Steps towards equality feels like oppression to those in power. So basically with that saying, everything is all peaches and cream and roses and butterflies and rainbows, just as long as you're not taking my food out of my mouth and eating off of my table. That's what it says. So Wikipedia defines allyship as the practice of emphasizing social justice, inclusion, and human rights by members of an in-group to advance the interests of an oppressed or marginalized out-group. Allyship is part of the anti-oppression or anti-racist conversation, which puts into use social justice theories and ideals. So how can one become an ally? So I'm going to give you some examples of how. And I will say again, there are individuals out there who really want to be allies and who are actually sincere. So I want to say that not everyone has an ulterior motive or things like that. Okay, because I have friends that are definitely sincere and willing to learn and have put in the work. I will say that. So number one, become a sponsor. So what does that entail? And first of all, this is from CanadianEquality.ca, if you just want to reference it. So again, become a sponsor, and that's being a champion and advocate for someone from an underrepresented community to support their career growth. Okay, so that's an example of that. And I'm not going to use an example for all of them, just for time. Okay. Call out bad behavior. So basically, calling out bad behavior. When you see something, say something. Don't sit there and laugh, as we're going to hear in a few minutes, or you probably already heard the video, but I'm going to play it after this. Okay. So basically, calling out unacceptable behavior in people from the in group that one may be exhibiting, making fun of the out group. So for instance, again, you're going to hear in the video, where the audio is not a video, the audio of laughing and some remarks that just were not okay. Okay, so people in the underrepresented group may not feel comfortable raising the issues, okay? So if you're in a in-group, you may want to call out the bad behavior for them. Follow an array of voices and listen. And I will hone on the word listen. Do not go into spaces that you're not really an expert in and trying to dominate, because that's the whole point. That's the purpose. Learn and listen to understand. Okay? Seek training and beyond. So you may want to go to workshops, listen to podcasts, or even talk with some people who are an expert and that subject. So for instance, during the whole George Floyd, you may want to go to some trainings where you can get educated on race issues, race relations. And I will say this, I can see both sides. There are some of our white counterparts who are just not privy because they haven't lived the life. And so, because I know I hear a lot of comments about, well, you know, they're blind. These are things that they should know, but not necessarily, not if you didn't live that life. So, and around people of color. So I just want to be fair. Now, some people, I definitely believe that they just want to be oblivious because they want to be oblivious, like it didn't exist and like it doesn't exist, I should say. Another way is to be cautious of the pedestal effect. Now, what is this pedestal effect? This is when, for example, men are given special treatment and shout outs for even small acts of gender equality. So that's an example. So basically, if someone is doing something for or towards race relation, you know, we have to be careful of not wanting the accolades and the applause. Do it because you want to do it, not because you want to be on a pedestal. What we call maybe the white savior complex, that could be an example as well. Amplify voices of others. Never speak for a person or on behalf of them. You know, we want to amplify the voices that don't usually get heard. And lastly, use inclusive language. Be aware of language that may shun people that may be in the out group or underrepresented or marginalized group. So, in the aftermath of the George Floyd murder, you know, we witnessed a flood of support in the form of the White Wall. And what that was basically, it was so comical to me, but yeah. there were basically a human protective barrier of white women that was erected as barricades protecting the Black Lives Matter protesters from being harmed by aggressive police officers. Now, why does that need to happen? It's really sad. But to be honest with you, you saw actual police officers being more gentle with them. Really sad. So I do applaud some of those women who went on the front lines. So it's not, I'm not going to say that that their efforts wasn't appreciated, you know, so I don't want to have that type of tone. But it's sad that we have to do things like that is what I'm getting at. We also witnessed an insurgence of requests for workshops, diversity training, seminars, webinars, which were all good and dandy. But I will say this, it was very exhausting. to, you know, serve as people's personal workshop leaders all the time and being asked questions about race, even though, like, again, I have to say the whole point of being asked and having the interest, it was refreshing on one end, I will say, but very exhausting if you were on the other end, always being pulled and prodded, if you will. We saw an insurgence of Black Lives Matter banners, commercials, where Black people were being shown, water cooler talks centered around questions of race relations and I'm sorries. And yeah, we saw a lot of that. We also saw many profile pics fade to black with the covered black fist, you know, the black power symbols in show of solidarity. People wanting to purchase books, you know, our white counterparts wanting to purchase books to learn more and to support black businesses, which I thought was refreshing as well. Now, I don't want to seem pessimistic, as again, I do believe some were sincere in their efforts and show of interest and solidarity. But I want to pose a question. Was this all performative? Or was these things sincere gestures to do better, wanting to do better? And I have those questions. And I know many others are very skeptical of the motivation behind the newfound interest in Black people. Yeah. So I even alluded to some of this in a Facebook thread where I am a part of some therapist groups on Facebook. And I even posed a question to some of them. You know, it was all good and dandy, but I want to see and challenge you to talk to your family members, your friends, you know, behind closed doors. I want to challenge you on that. Showing solidarity in my face, I really don't care about. I want to know what you do behind closed doors. So I challenge a lot of people to really step up to the plate and have those uncomfortable conversations with their family members and friends, as opposed to laughing and being two-faced, if you will. Now, let's get to Miss Rachel Nichols, the ESPN sports commentator. And this has all been leading to this. As Black people, we have long suspected that there were dinner table conversations being had about us with unpleasantries being uttered. Yeah, but thank God to our technological advances, many are being caught with these nice and neat sound bites. So, in a recently taped conversation, which was recorded unbeknownst to Adam Mendelsohn, I think that's his name, if I'm pronouncing it incorrectly, you know, whatever. The longtime advisor of the Los Angeles Lakers superstar LeBron James and agent to Rich Paul, I guess. Yeah. So this conversation was basically had in July of 2020, so last year. And so Rachel Nichols alluded to the fact that Maria Taylor, which is a Black sports commentator herself with a long, impressive resume that I will get to later, she alluded to that she was only being recognized for, I guess, covering the NBA finals due to her race as opposed to her pure talent, which she clearly has. And this isn't anything new to us. You know, we've been long regarded as products of tokenism and affirmative action in white spaces, as opposed to being elevated and promoted and advanced due to our intellect and talent, right? So I am going to play the video for you. You probably have heard it. It's been all over social media. It's been the hot topic. So I am going to play the video. Well, the audio. I keep saying video. I'm going to play the audio for you. So please listen.
Hey, instead of hosting the NBA Finals, like, why don't you do yours as silent reporter after the NBA Finals?
Because guess what that would clear the way for?
For Maria to do the hosting role.
Yeah.
So
I have declined. I don't know what their next move is, but they are feeling pressure because of all of that. And I'm trying to figure out like how to just, you know, my thing is like, I wish Marie Taylor all the success in the world. She covers football, she covers basketball. If you need to give her more things to do because you're feeling pressure about your like crappy long time record on diversity, which by the way I myself like know personally from the female side of it, like go for it. Just, you know, find it somewhere else. Like you're not gonna find it with me and taking my thing away.
So you've heard the audio. What do you think? Very interesting, right? Right. It's amazing what people say when they don't think anyone is listening. So during the conversation, as you've just heard on the audio, Ms. Nichols was seeking the advice from Mendelssohn because she believed her bosses were advancing Maria Taylor at her expense. Go figure, right? But the kicker in a recording of the audio obtained by the New York Times, as we've heard, Nichols and Mendelssohn paused for a moment during the conversation after Nichols said she planned to wait for ESPN's next move. Now, this is what really got me. And I think a lot of people are letting Mendelssohn off the hook. So I'm going to read what the New York Times stated in their words. Mendelssohn, who is white, then said, "I don't know. I'm exhausted. Between Me Too and Black Lives Matter, I got nothing left." And wait for it, Nichols laughed. So she wasn't offended by the statement at all. She laughed at it. Now, I know the media, they're all at Nichols' throat. But Mendelssohn is the one who actually said this, and he is the one who actually works with LeBron James. So I'm very curious to see what LeBron James thinks about all this. And so I may have to do an after show because that was very interesting to me. So let's discuss Nichols a little bit more. Because the things that she was supposedly offended about and alleged, accused her colleague for Taylor, I forgot her name for a minute. I think she benefited from the same assistance, right? So let's go ahead. So Nichols married film and music director Max Nichols. Now, he's the son of film and stage director Mike Nichols in a Jewish ceremony in Venice in 2001. Now, her mother-in-law, the stepmother of Max Nichols, and the last wife of Mike Nichols before his death is Diane Sawyer. Yes, the Diane Sawyer that you're thinking of, right? The news commentator. And so it's the tokenism and form of nepotism for me. So you're not going to tell me that her linkage to them, her association, didn't get her some type of clout. I'm just saying. And look, I'm alleging, who knows, but it's just really odd that she wouldn't, right? So after the break, let's discuss Maria Taylor's resume. Since many are thinking, I wouldn't say many. We'll just leave it at Nichols and Mendelssohn. Well, I don't even think Mendelssohn even thought that. Let's just say Nichols. She thought that maybe she wasn't qualified to have that position. Let's go down her resume because I beg to differ. So please stay tuned. After this break. So let's get into the very, very impressive resume of our Miss Maria Taylor. According to Google.com, Maria Taylor joined ESPN as a college analyst and reporter in 2014. One of the network's most versatile commentators, Taylor was named a reporter for College Game Day built by Home Depot and ABC Saturday Night Football in 2017. She added NBA countdown hosting duties to her roster in 2019. She had previously served as the host of SEC Network's traveling pregame show, SEC Nation alongside analyst Tim Tebow, Marcus Spears, and Paul Feinbaum. Taylor's versatility is showcased on a variety of ESPN shows and platforms as she hosts Football Live, Big Monday, and NCAA Women's Final Four studio coverage, serves as a regular co-host on Get Up, and works as a sideline reporter on Saturday primetime and marquee men's basketball games throughout the season. In addition, Taylor is an analyst on other SEC and ESPN telecasts, including volleyball and women's basketball. She is also a part of ESPN's NBA draft coverage. Prior to her role on SEC Nation, she served as a college football reporter on SEC Network. In 2013, she was a sideline reporter on ESPN2's weekly Saturday night primetime college football telecast, in addition to the Orange Bowl, her second consecutive year covering the annual bowl game. Additionally, she has been an analyst on the NCAA Women's Basketball Selection Show, NCAA Women's Basketball Tournament Preview Show, and also ESPN's coverage of both the NCAA Women's Basketball Tournament and Women's Volleyball National Championship for the previous 2 years. Also, Taylor attended the University of Georgia, where she played volleyball and basketball for the Bulldogs. She was named to the All-SEC volleyball team 3 times and was also a member of a USA A2 national football team. She graduated from Georgia in 2009 with a degree in broadcast news. She returned to the university to pursue her Master's of Business Administration, which she completed in May of 2013. She is currently a native of Alpharetta, Georgia. So as you see, she has a very, very impressive resume. She also played sports, very educated, very beautiful. She deserves the spot. And it's not because she is Black like a lot of individuals want to claim. It's the reason why we received our positions. You know, we as Black citizens, we live in a country that have always shown its disdain for our mere presence, yet love our very beautiful physical attributes and our abilities in the form of labor. You know, they love our, what I should say, they loved our labor. So they loved our physical attributes, you know, our beauty, our lips, our hair, our everything. And since the beginning of time, they loved our ability. You know, we're strong physically and emotionally. When it's trending, our cultural contributions, you know, but inside of all this, despite of all this, they continue to traumatize us and belittle us. So you want one aspect of us, but then you shun the other. And so I really wanted to take this time to highlight what she actually brings to the table, which is a lot. So I don't want anyone thinking like, okay, well, maybe they did do this because, you know, she's Black and she's really not qualified. No, she's very qualified. Very qualified. So after the break, I want to, and not even really spend a lot of time, I want to talk more about the outcry and all the backlash, because there is some backlash, because a lot of unhappy campers in the form of the other Black ESPN commentators, they're not happy about how ESPN has been handling this situation. So after this break, let's get into that, followed by my conclusion.
Hey, this is your girl Letitia coming to you from the virtual couch. I want to take a little bit of your time today to discuss how to find the right therapist. Now, like with anything, your hairstylist, your gardener, your medical doctor, it may take a few tries before you find the right fit. Finding the right therapist is no different. So stay the course and don't give up. Also, I want to empower you to ask questions. Do not feel like you're being intrusive by asking questions, because guess what? This is the person that's going to lead you and guide you towards your healing. And this is a very important partnership. So I will say this even as a therapist myself. If a therapist becomes offended by any questions that you may have, just like with any other individual that I discussed before, like your doctor, your gardener, whoever, someone, you know, working on your home, if they become offended, you're probably not going to hire them, right? Exactly. Your therapist is no different. So don't feel offended. Don't be offended by the degrees and the licenses and, yes, all those hard things we worked for, but we're here for you. And so it is your right to ask every question you need to ask to make sure it is the right fit for you. And again, it may take a few tries. And again, it doesn't mean that you're a bad person or that therapist is a bad person either. It just means that, you know what, they may not be the right person to guide you on your journey. So I want to leave you with a few resources. PsychologyToday.com is a resource where you can view various therapists, and you can even input your area by your zip code, your city, and your state to find the therapist nearest you. You can also go to therapyforblackgirls.com and therapyforblackmen.org. Please seek these resources out. They are awesome. There are some wonderful, very experienced therapists on these sites, some of which are my beautiful colleagues, and I know the hard work that they do, and they are waiting to hear from you. Okay, so I'm not gonna take any more of your time, because I know you can't wait to get to that computer, right? And search out that therapist. So I'm not going to say anything further. If you want to tell me about your experience, I would love to hear about it. Please email me at virtualcouchpodcast1@gmail.com. And happy hunting. Take care.
Did y'all enjoy the break? Now find your spot on the virtual couch. And get ready to hear our girl, Letitia, drop some more gems on ya. Drop some more gems on them, Letitia.
Letitia, drop some more gems on them.
So now let us get into the juice. What's been going on in the ESPN offices? So according to NewYorkTimes.com, some of those involved saw the initial maneuvering as a sign of the network favoring Nichols, despite a backdrop of criticism from employees who've complained that Sports Network has long mishandled problems with racism. So this is not an isolated incident at all. There has been problems at ESPN and people are speaking out. It go on to say they have yet to discipline Nichols, and get this, she didn't really believe that she did anything wrong. She felt that she was the one that was actually wronged for having her quote unquote private conversation taken to HR. But we're gonna get into that a little bit later. It is not clear why her camera was on, but most people at ESPN believe that Nichols using new technology during the pandemic did not turn it off properly. Isn't that some slight shade? Basically, you got caught, sis. You were caught. You didn't know how to work your new mic, being that we're all at that time was at home, you know, working from home remotely. Yeah, but see, that's what happens when you are secretly thinking and speaking things that you shouldn't be speaking behind closed doors. See, I always tell people, whatever goes on the dark is gonna come to light eventually. So, it effectively, basically, the article was saying that she had a hot mic incident. You don't say. So dozens of ESPN employees have access to the company video servers as part of their normal workflow. So at least one of these people watched the video on the server, get this, recorded it on a cell phone and shared it with others. So I guess that's where she was victimized, I suppose. Soon, more copies of the conversation was spreading among ESPN. Wow. So Nichols alluded to, which I thought was quite interesting in this conversation, she alluded to diversity issues that had long been going on. So she even said, you know, they're just mad because were giving her the position because of their crappy history with diversity. So there's been things that's been going on, but it's so funny how now it's an issue when it's quote unquote affecting you, right? Yeah. And so Taylor, she's declined to comment, but Nichols, you know, basically she had the audacity to say this. Listen to this. Nichols said, "The recording of the video by an ESPN colleague was hurtful. I was shaken that a fellow employee would do this." This is so hilarious. "And that other employees, including some of those within the NBA project, had no remorse about passing around a spy video of a female coworker alone in her hotel room." I cannot believe the white tears that I'm hearing right now. So see how it's flipped? There is no apology for what you said. You are now a victim of being spied on by a spy video. I can't make this up. I would no way suggest that the way the comment came to light should grant a free pass on them being hurtful to other people. So she had the nerve to actually say that. So basically, no one has been... have received any reprimand, but the individual who, by the name of Kayla Johnson, she's a digital video producer that ESPN said in this article took the information to human resources. And she also informed Taylor. Basically, she was looking out for Taylor's back and said, "Sis, watch your back, because this is what I have." Would I have done that? Probably. I'm not going to lie. And just receive the consequences later. She was looking out for a sis, for someone who probably claimed to be her friend, smiling in her face and doing this behind her back. Johnson, who is Black, was suspended for 2 weeks without pay and later was given less desirable tasks at work. So she was reprimanded harshly for this, I should say. Some may say it was a slap on the wrist, but I don't think so at all. Johnson did not respond to requests for comments and recently left ESPN. So she left ESPN, which I do not blame her at all, because we already know that this was just a setup for her to continue to receive horrible treatment, discriminatory treatment, right? So I just want to close with this. I don't want to, you know, keep too long because this was a very long episode, but I wanted you to see it from all angles. This just let us know that we have so far to go. And why we need some of the laws in place that we have in place, like affirmative action, that people say that Black people are benefiting from. But we need these type of things in place just to have a seat at the table. What Rachel Nichols did was very and highly despicable. And I'm glad she was caught. And I just want to keep eyes on ESPN to see what they're going to actually do. Since she wasn't reprimanded for this, we're going to see how all this plays out. Thank you for joining me on my comfy couch today for me to spill all this tea. But, you know, take care of yourself, take care of each other, and I will be looking to joining you and spending some wonderful time with you soon. Take care.
Wasn't that so fire? I hope you enjoyed your time on the virtual couch with our girl, Leticia. On Leticia's virtual couch. You did that, Leticia.
Leticia's virtual couch.